This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Documents released yesterday indicate Governor Scott Walker was aware of a secret parallel email system that was in place during his time as Milwaukee County Executive. The thousands of documents are related to the first so-called John Doe investigation into campaign activities. They include many conversations between Walker's taxpayer-supported county staff and his campaign staff as he first ran for governor in 2010. Among the most significant is an email from Walker's administration director to aide Kelly Reinflesh, noting that the secret email system allowed her to communicate regularly with then-County Executive Walker and his chief of staff. Reinflesh was the only person in the probe convicted of illegally conducting campaign business while on county time. Other county staffers who were charged with responding to open records requests at the time were reportedly unaware of the system. Mordecai Lee is a professor of governmental affairs at UW-Milwaukee's School of Continuing Education. He talked with Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke about the most significant revelations from the thousands of documents that were released on Wednesday.
Well, we have to start at square one in the sense that the prosecutor had those 27,000 pages all along, and the prosecutor decided not to charge the person who is now the governor. And that indicates that while the governor's name comes through in some of those documents, and there's at least one email from the governor, that they did not see prosecutable evidence. And so I think when Scott Walker yesterday said, look, this is something that happened 3 to 4 years ago. This went through a legal process. It was then closed. I think he has a point to make that it's sort of fun to read those documents, especially for political junkies, to really see the inside of a campaign. But whether there is anything new here, the governor is right. There is nothing new here.
Is there anything in and of itself illegal about the existence of this separate email system?
It's possible, although, again, all the charges have already been filed. But here was a situation where they were bending over backwards to use technology so that theoretically any emails they were sending were not in the public domain. They were not on their county computers. They were not on their county email address. So it was definitely a situation to try to hide something. Now, as it turns out, the prosecutor, without too much problems, said that a subpoena applied to everything they did when they were in their county offices, and quickly they found out about this. So there clearly was an intent to evade the scope of public records and public meetings, but in the end it failed.
Well, and at the heart of this was this idea that there were people that were mixing county business with campaign business, and that, we should note, is illegal. But the issue seems to be whether Scott Walker, as county executive, was aware of it, not whether he was actually engaged in doing it himself.
Mitch, you've really gotten to the heart of some of the issues, and some of them are about crimes, and some of them are about sort of political missteps that may or may not end up being big deals. But I think we have to clarify that the law is understandable in principle, that when we as the taxpayers pay for somebody's time and we buy them a computer and we give them an email address, that they can only use it for official business. So if you want to parse it closely, when they go home at night and they're on their personal computer, they can do campaign work. They just can't do it on the taxpayer's dollar. And what we're seeing from these emails clearly is there were campaign-related activities while they were in the office, while they were using county computers. And there was extensive coordination with the campaign. And I realize that some people are saying they're shocked and appalled that there's coordination between an incumbent's office and a campaign for another office. But, you know, when Barack Obama was running for reelection, there clearly was coordination between the White House and his Chicago campaign office. So to a certain extent, I think we have to withhold the shocked and appalled reaction with the realities of what it is to campaign for another office.
Well, and speaking as someone who has been in elected office and has had to seek election as well, I mean, how realistic is it to even expect that there not be any coordination? I mean, just from a logistical standpoint, it seems kind of impossible to imagine that there would not be some kind of coordination between an elected office and a campaign staff.
You're right, Mitch, and it's sort of hard to draw the finest of fine lines because, for example, if they had an 8 a.m. daily conference call, how are we going to handle some issues? Who's going to handle what? I think that's okay. Presumably, these were not two-hour-long conference calls. These were just sort of touch base, get everything clear for the day. I think that's really okay. When people start raising their eyebrows, it's how much was his official office doing things deliberately molded by the campaign's needs? And again, we should not be naive about these things. But on the other hand, we would not want a campaign manager telling county officials what to do because it's convenient to the campaign.
We should also note that there is a distinction often between what's unethical and what's illegal.
That's a fabulous point. And I think the fallout that happens over the next couple of days is going to be based on that distinction. In other words, Governor Walker can clearly say, this is a closed John Doe. I was not a target. I was not indicted. There was no crime here. But you're right. There's a kind of a political standard that is slightly different. And you know, back in the Watergate days, and I'm not implying in any way
right,
that this is Watergate.
It's a loaded comparison, but it's a useful parallel.
And the parallel comes from Howard Baker, who was a Republican of Tennessee, a member of the Watergate Committee, and he framed it perfectly. He said, what did he know and when did he know it? And I think right now we're seeing this being applied to Chris Christie about Bridgegate. And so if we were to take the worst case scenario, using the standard of what did he know and when did he know it, it appears that Governor Walker sort of knew about the intense coordination and sort of knew about the special email network. But are we going to say that therefore he must have known that there were laws and crimes being committed, that he must have known X? And up to now, he's got ice in his veins. You know, up to now, he says, I had a policy. They weren't supposed to do campaign work on office time. And he really leaves it at that.
Well, from a legal standpoint, it seems that there, if I get what you're saying correctly, there's not necessarily a legal smoking gun here. But that does not necessarily mean and obviously doesn't mean that this won't show up in a political sense during the governor's reelection campaign.
You've really hit it on the head in the sense of what accusations get traction. And I think we have to realize that Governor Walker is a very skilled politician, and he's practically a Teflon politician. And it seems to me when the Democrats – let's say they're running a 30-second ad. It's October. They're trying to pull the worst they can out of this cache of documents. So they're accusing him of what? Of he wasn't a good manager, that he didn't oversee his people well, or – they ignored his policy of not engaging in campaign work on office time. Would that stick? Would that say to a voter, gee, I was going to vote for Scott Walker, but now that I'm hearing this ad, I'm going to vote against him? I'm guessing it's not going to change a lot of people's minds.
It is fairly easy to imagine the campaign commercials between now and then, though.
Absolutely. When you're in politics, you do whatever it takes to win. And so yesterday we saw the Republican Governors Association run a flat-out attack ad on Mary Burke. And we can assume that the same things will be done by Democrats against Governor Walker, sometimes quoting from these emails.
Is there any kind of damage control that you think that the governor needs to do in the short run? You know, to go back to the Chris Christie comparison, there were people he could fire. But in this case, the people that are involved in this were working on his campaign or with his county executive office 4 or more years ago.
You know, this is really interesting because Governor Christie fired some people and then he started attacking the key witness against him. I think David Wildstein, if I'm saying it right. Notice that Governor Walker has disassociated himself from any violations of the law, but he hasn't denounced those staffers. And I think in the political world, one can see that they're showing a loyalty to him in the way that he's reciprocating by not denouncing them as sort of the scum of the earth kind of thing. And I think this shows us what a skilled politician he is. And think of what happened yesterday morning. Yesterday morning, he did a media availability just before the documents were released. And he he didn't run from the cameras, you know, and he said right into the microphones, he said, this is something that a county employee did about 3-4 years ago, and the legal process has ended about a year ago. And that shows that he knew he had to give them a soundbite, because otherwise they just hound him forever for a soundbite. But he did it just before he had to talk about any individual document. And in a sense, that was his response. And that shows you what a sort of fleet-footed politician he is.
There was one other interesting revelation. There are probably several more, but there are a lot of documents and we haven't gone through all of them. But one of the other interesting revelations in the documents was the apparent animosity that Walker and his staff had towards the person who would become the lieutenant governor. Does that have any traction, any significance at this stage of the game?
That's a fabulous point, and now we can move away from scandal-mongering and talk about good government. And, you know, the model we have for presidential nominees, so for example, Mitt Romney, that after he became the Republican nominee, he picked somebody to be his running mate. He wanted somebody simpatico with him. And in Wisconsin, we have this very bizarre system of not following that template. Instead, there's a primary for governor on the Republican and Democratic side, and then there's a separate primary for lieutenant governor. And so sometimes people get paired with other people they're not simpatico with. And the documents are showing us that he was vaguely in a slate with State Representative Davis. He wanted Davis to win. Davis did not win. Clefish won. And I think we should say that it's in the interest of good government that a governor gets to choose who their lieutenant governor is instead of this crazy independent primary approach.
And so is the lasting impact of that part of the document release that things are just more awkward between the governor and the lieutenant governor?
Well, both of them are very skilled politicians and professional public personas. And so they clearly are not at war. She clearly declared loyalty to him, and she's doing exactly what he wants. And so she's a member of the team, as has happened in several other situations in Wisconsin politics. But that he didn't want her is sort of fun to talk about, because it does get to the silliness of having separate primaries for lieutenant governor.
Mordecai Lee, thanks so much.
Thank you, Mitch.
Occasional news analyst Mordecai Lee is professor of governmental affairs at UWM's School of Continuing Education. He spoke with Mitch Tyke about yesterday's release of the first John Doe probe documents. Coming up next, we'll learn about efforts to improve the health of Milwaukee's rivers. WUWM's environmental reporter Susan Bentz reports next on Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.